Andrew spoke about the Gobudan Lila. It's very beautiful, and it's very exciting. And we have been talking about it for the last three programs that we've had up here in Gauteng. And what was it? Was it last night? No, it was the night before. Yes, it was Thursday. We were at our ISKCON Santam Center, and we were talking about it there also. And we got up to the point of what is called the Aniyor Lila. While we're at it, just take this on. We'll pass around the book. This is just an advanced copy put together by hand. It's pretty rough now. It's been handled by quite a few hundred people. So just be careful if it doesn't fall to pieces. But anyway, have a look. This is the book. And beautiful book, 300 pages, loads of really nice photos. And it's only 400 rands. But today is the last day. Would you believe? Seriously, it's actually the last day. That if you order it, because it hasn't arrived in the country yet, it's passing through Singapore right now, I was told. When it comes in 2-3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, then you can get a copy. But today's the last day to make an advance order. And, yes, there's Vrajeshri Devi Dasi. She'll put her hand up now, see? There she is. And if you order one from her now, you get it for only 350 rands, which is not much at all, really. So, okay. Let us carry on. We're in the middle of the Aniyor Lila, part of the Govardhan Lila, the greater pastime of, eventually at least, of Lord Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And for those of you, I think there may be a few of you here who may not be so familiar with the whole story, Lord Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill and the events leading up to that. So what happened was, just very briefly, as an introduction, Lord Krishna saw that his father, Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj's friends and associates, the cowherd men of Vrindavan, they were in the process of preparing for a big sacrifice. The sacrifice consisted mainly, among some other things, but mainly of offering different types of food to Lord Indra. Lord Indra is the king of the material heavenly planets. And in terms of the universal management, the running of this universe, Lord Indra is in charge of rainfall. And Nanda Maharaj and all the residents of Vrindavan, they were cowherding people, farming people, but particularly cowherding people. And being farming people, cowherding people, they need rain. need regular rainness. It's vital. So therefore, well, Krishna asked, acting as if he didn't understand what was going on, Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj, well, what's going on? What is this? And Nanda Maharaj explained that, we're dependent on rain, therefore we're going to worship Lord Indra. And Lord Indra is what we call in Krishna consciousness a demigod. Literally, demigod means half god. He's not exactly half god, but he's well above human beings, well above us, to the point that he's controlling the rainfall, not even just of this planet, that's already a big thing, but actually of the whole universe. So he's a big, powerful person, demigod. This is at least the term which Srila Prabhupada adopted for the universal controllers within the material world. But now, the residents of Vrindavan, they are all great devotees of Krishna, great lovers of Krishna. And Krishna was not happy that they had this idea that let's worship the demigods rather than let us just depend on Krishna and serve Krishna, and Krishna will protect us and look after us, which is the mood of the devotee. We don't need to worship anyone other than Krishna. So it's a bit of a long story, but, we kept it brief, and it took us 3 nights so far to get to this point. You know, that's really in a nutshell, maybe a couple of nutshells. But Krishna had to convince them that no, don't worship the demigods, but worship who? Krishna didn't want to just say, listen, folks, I'm God. Okay? Get me? I'm God. And you should just worship me as God and offer your respects and bow down to me and worship me with great awe and reverence. Because their relationship with Krishna is one of pure love. And in that mood of pure love, that awe, reverence, formality of respecting some higher person who's very powerful, and we have to be very respectful and all of that. In the mood of pure love, that sort of attitude of respect and reverence is not there. And the mood of love is higher than the mood of respect and fear even of that higher controller. Yeah. Just like, well, we give the example, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a high court judge, that sort of person. When he's in the court, then the people come, the lawyers come, and the people come, and they all have to sort of bow to him a little and be very respectful and call him Your Honor, Sir. And in some countries in the courts, you cannot, if you're a lawyer and you want to walk out of the court, you have to walk out backwards. You're not allowed to turn your back to the judge. I don't know here in South Africa. Is it? Oh, it is. Well, what of our experienced lawyers would say it's like that. So, in other ways, it's contempt of court, you can get into trouble. So in the court, everyone is very careful and very formal about how they address and deal with, interact with the judge. But when the judge goes home in the evening, and now he's there with his wife and his family, his children, what do you think, ladies? Does his wife bow before him? Your Honor, sir, if it pleases you, sir. Do you think she only walks out of the room backwards so she can return it? What do you think? I don't think so. He gets home and she probably, I'm sure sometimes she says, "You forgot to take the rubbish out." Oh, come on. Look, we got all this rubbish here. What's going on? You see? And the children, you can be sure they don't call them Your Worship, Your Honor, Sir. It's a different relationship. It's one of love. And it's higher. It's higher than the relationship he has with the people in the court. Meaning, why is he in there in the court? He's just making money to maintain his family. Everything is revolving actually around his family. And sure enough, when he gets to a certain age, he'll retire from the law court. And he's not going to retire from his family, because that's his life. His family is his life. Yes, so you get the idea. The principle of love is higher than the principle of just awe and reverence. So Krishna wanted to convince them to stop doing the Indra Puja, but without telling them that he's God. So, like I said, it's a long story, but basically what he said is that we should worship those things which our life depends on. And we should be very respectful, very careful about how we deal with those things that our lives depend on. And who or what do our lives depend on? Our lives depend on the cows, because they're cowherd people. And the cows are dependent on Govardhan Hill, because they go there every day and there's beautiful grass there. And the cows eat the grass on Govardhan Hill. And in that way the cows live. So, this is Krishna's point. So, just briefly, that we should worship those things which are actually our lives depend on, the cows and Govardhan Hill. So let, Krishna said, let us then take all these things we've gathered for the Indra Puja and use them for a big Govardhan Puja. And everyone agreed. So they did that. And they have all sorts of foodstuffs. Any sort of foodstuff you could imagine, and many that none of us could imagine. Oh yeah. Like, let's see, what's your favorite prasadam, Prabhuji? Butter paneer. We have a specialist here. What is your favorite prasadam, Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu?
Beans.
Serious? Okay, fair enough. I like beans myself. What sort of bean? Kidney? kidney bean, gajra, sugar,
broad
beans. You see, he is a real Durban man, a real Chatsworth man. Okay, I like beans myself. Oh, yeah. And what's your favorite present? Pasta! This is the Italian influence. Lavina, what's your favorite? Pizza! Okay. Yes, okay, that's fine. Pizza, sure, hard to beat. But you all know what a pizza is, don't you? A pizza is a self-realized chapati. Roti. A self-realized roti. You think that they just stay like that, just plain and simple? When they go to Italy, wow. Things happen. Sundalal Prabhu. This is Sundalal Prabhu, by the way, from Mauritius. Very senior devotee from there. Many, many years devotee. What's your favorite prasada?
The two.
Which two?
Rasgulla.
Rasgulla. And?
And dal puri.
And dal puri. You know what a dal puri is? It's a Mauritian dal roti. That's what it is. But it's more advanced than South African. Oh, yes. More advanced. In fact, I would say it is Mauritius's great contribution to the culinary sciences. Yeah, Mauritian dal puri. Wow, it's really nice. And rasgulla, of course. And you know what one of my favorites, you know what it is? Chum chum. Chum chum. It's a Bengali sweet. How many of you have had chum chum before? Real chum chum? Okay. Those of you who haven't, you haven't lived. You've wasted 25% of your life. Okay. So anyway, the basic point is that they did this big food offering to go the downhill. It was massive. Thousands of preparations. And when we say thousands, we actually mean thousands of different food preparations means like halva. Halva, of course, is very popular generally. I don't know about here in Midrand, but you can have halva with sultanas or halva with raisins. Or you could have halva with sultanas and raisins. Or halva with nuts. Or how about with nuts and raisins? You see. And you can say, well, each one's a different preparation. But here when we say they offered thousands of preparations, it means actually thousands of different preparations. And to take it even a step further, Srimati Radharani is in charge of Krishna's kitchen. She cooks for Krishna twice every day, breakfast and like a late lunch or early evening meal when he gets back from herding the cows. And she's been doing this since there was no beginning, actually, not even for thousands of years. Just there was no beginning. Who knows? how many millions and zillions of years. That Radharani is so expert that she has not repeated the same preparation twice. Always something different and new. What do you think of that? Anyway, meditate on that. So there they were, and they offered all these food preparations to Govardhan Hill. And just before they did that, Krishna manifested a gigantic form on top of Govardhan Hill. And it was in such a way that all the residents of Vrindavan who were at the bottom of the hill watching what's going on, well, they could all tell that this form is Krishna. It's a form of Krishna. Plus, it's a form of Govardhan Hill. In this way, they could understand that Krishna and Govardhan Hill are identical. Yes. So then they offered all the food, and that the gigantic form on top of the hill consumed everything in seconds, and then shouted out, cried out, "Anya, Anya, Anya," which means "Anna" means food, or means more. Give me more food. Give me more food. Anya. What did he shout out?
Anya. Anya.
Well, there's a couple of you who want some more. Others, it sounds like you had enough prasadam already. Anyway. So they rushed home. This is where we got up to on Thursday. They rushed home. They got whatever ingredients were left at home. And they rushed back and prepared another massive offering of food. There were waterfalls of ghee. There were lakes of yogurt. There were rivers of milk, and rivers of nectar drinks. Just quite incredible. So, and well, there were lakes of sweet rice, lakes of rubbery. If you know what rubbery is, he doesn't know. He wasted another at least 10% of the rubbery. So, and you could dive into those lakes of sweet rice and just drown at the lotus feet of Govardhan Hill. What a way to go. So then that gigantic form of the Lord consumed everything again in seconds. The second time now, everything was just gone, just like that. In Russia, they have a saying. What is it? Hunger is the best chef. Hunger is the best chef. Because when you're really hungry, you'll eat anything. Even whatever it may be that you don't really like. But you'll eat it, because you're hungry and you'll feel, wow, that was great. But if you're not hungry, and I mean if you have just been at ISKCON Midran and had the feast cooked by Mother Madri and company, just a complete knockout wipe out, you know, super extravaganza feast of Maha 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 Prasadam. And you are now semi paralytic. You know, you're sitting there, you cannot move. And even then, if they bring you your, what is otherwise, your favorite top of the pops, prasadam, your butter paneer, but you are just unable even to stand up, then you're not going to eat any. And even if somehow you force yourself to eat a mouthful or something just because, you know, it's meant to be your favorite, that is just not going to be very nice at all. So you see, hunger is the best chef. It's very true. In Russia, they have all sorts of funny little sayings like that. I am not so rich that I can afford a cheap car. In other words, it's going to break down all the time, it will cost me money all the time, so I'm not so rich I can afford a cheap car. Anyway, that's by the way. So now all that second food offering was gone, down to the last grain of rice and last drop of milk. And you know, devotees, you know you must not waste prasadam, of course, but you just must not waste rice, even one grain. Milk is liquid religiosity. If you waste milk, you get bad karma. And rice, Prabhupada explained, every grain of rice that you waste, in the future, you will be short of that. So, you know, if you waste a few grains every day over the period of a year or over a period of some time, then one day you'll find you cannot get food. You may have money, you could buy food, but there is just no food available. And you'll feel the lack. That's because you wasted. So there they are, the Brijvasis. All the food, basically, in Vrajmandala is gone completely. And Govardhan, that gigantic form of the Lord on top of the hill, is just crying out, Aniyo, 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 give me more, give me more. And it's not just like, yeah, you know, maybe could I have some seconds, perhaps. And he's like, crying out, give me more now, as they say in Chatsworth, now, or now, which means now. Now means, you know, when you can, when I can, very soon. Now means quite soon. And now means now. So this is Govardhan. Just give me more. But they had no more. There was nothing. So Nanda Maharaj and the Brijvasis, they were in anxiety. That we gave up every year we do the Indra Puja, and, you know, we get our rain, at least this is how we understand it. But now we decided to give up the Indra Puja. And we cannot go back and do it now, because all the food's gone. Because that's the puja, to offer food. So the Indra Puja, well, no chance. We decided to do the Govardhan Puja. But Govardhan is not satisfied. We're finished. We've had it. We've failed. What is going to become of us? Maybe we'll just become impoverished and die of starvation. So they were in anxiety. Nanda Maharaj, who's the leader of the Brijvasis, the residents of Vrindavan, he was in great anxiety. What are we going to do? But then Lord Balaram, who is the crest jewel of the intelligent, amazing personality, he took one tulsi leaf, and he climbed up to that gigantic form of the Lord on top of Govardhan Hill, and gave him that one little tulsi leaf, and that gigantic form of the Lord ate that leaf, and he became completely satisfied, fully satisfied, and no more aniyor, just from that one tulsi leaf. Because the thing is, devotees, and please remember this, please note this, Krishna doesn't really care about what you offer. In terms of foodstuffs, you know, he doesn't really care how expert a cook you are, whether you know how to do, what was it, broad beans in 120 different ways. He doesn't care. All he wants is your love. But he's really hungry for your love. And he can just consume as much as you can offer him more, and he can just, he'd like to drown in your love, actually. So, and there's sometimes great devotees who just, they don't have facility to cook some nice preparations of different sorts. They just offer to the Lord something extremely simple. But because it's offered with love, the Lord accepts it, and actually he's very pleased. Like Sanatana Goswami, one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, he was worshipping Madan Mohan, one of the old deities of Vrindavan, and he had nothing. He literally had nothing. He would go out and beg every day. And sometimes people would give him some rice, uncooked rice, and nothing else. Nothing else. And he would come back and he would soak it. He didn't even have matches to light a fire. He didn't even have a pot to cook it in. He would just soak it in Yamuna water so it wasn't hard, if you know what completely uncooked rice is like. It's, you know, it's really hard. So it was not really hard. He would soak it and offer it with no salt. And what to speak of your nice garam masala and so on. Nothing, just rice with rice. And Madan Mohan was happy to accept it. And he would sometimes make a type of dal preparation. It is called bhati. Bhati. It's just soaked dal, which is ground and made into a, with water made into a paste, and you can make a ball. And the ball will hold. You can also make bhati out of wheat flour. Just make a ball. So you make it. He was making bhati out of wheat flour and yamuna water. And then he would build a fire and make it into balls, like maybe this size, something like that, and just throw the balls into the fire. And they would cook in the fire. Of course, the outside would be burnt, would just be black. And he would break the outside off. In the center is just a small sort of bready little ball. That's called bhati. And he would offer it to Madan Mohan. And one day, and just, it's just wheat flour and water, not even salt, what to speak of, anything else. And nothing else. No nice broad bean sati. No nice butter paneer. No barishan dal puri. No pasta. No pizza. Just little butties. Flour and water. And one day he offered some to Madan Mohan. He'd been offering them every day. So another day he offered bhati only. And Madan Mohan said to him, you know, would it be possible to have some salt with my bhati? And Sanatana Goswami said, I knew you wouldn't be satisfied with this simple diet. I'm going to take you to some family who can look after you nicely and cook for you really nicely. And Madan Mohan said, no. I'll take my bhati without salt, but I want to stay with you. This is love. Or, you know, the story about Vidura and his wife. What was his wife's name? Anyway, whatever her name was, I forget.
Vidurani.
Huh? She had, there's a name. I think it begins with L. Anyway, Krishna was invited by Duryodhan to a big feast in the palace. But Duryodhan is not a devotee. Actually, he's a big materialist and not a nice person. And but then Vidura invited Krishna for lunch at his place. So two invitations for lunch the same time. You can only, you know, accept one. So Krishna went to the place of Vidura because Vidura is a great devotee. But Vidura was extremely poor. All he had was bananas. And his wife was peeling the bananas and offering them to Krishna. But she was in such ecstasy being with Krishna, just completely, almost out of control, that she was peeling the bananas and throwing away the fruit and giving Krishna the skin. And Krishna was in such ecstasy being with his loving devotees, he didn't notice. And he was eating the skins. And after a while, Krishna said to Vidura, these are the best bananas I ever tasted. Now, don't you start eating banana skins. I think there's a reason why people don't. I assume they don't taste nice. But it was the love. So Tulsi is always full of love. Because Tulsi is a very extraordinary person. This is Tulsi, you see the plant just next to the altar on the right, on your right. That's Tulsi, that's real Tulsi. Not what a lot of the Indian people in South Africa call Tulsi, with the big leaves, which is actually basil. So Tulsi is an associate of Krishna from Goloka Vrindavan. And of course the deities here is Panchatattva. Deity forms, worship, we worship them, we understand the Lord is present. But still, on another level, they are brass deities. Manufactured items. Although we understand the Lord has accepted that form, the Lord is present, but still on another level, they're made of a material element by people. But Tulsi, she's also a resident of the kingdom of God, and she's come here to give us her mercy, just like the Panchatattva have appeared as deities. But Tulsi is living by our standards, in our terms, living. She's alive. The deities, in our terms, well, they are alive, but in our terms, relative material terms, you know, you could say they're statues. They're not exactly. They're deities. The Lord is there. But Tulsi is actually fully living by our standards and accepting our worship. Very special personality and always full of love for Krishna. So that gigantic form of the Lord was satisfied by the offering of the one Tulsi leaf. No amount of broad beans unoffered, you know, just unoffered broad beans, not even unlimited amounts of butter paneer unoffered would satisfy the Lord like that one Tulsi leaf. So then the Vrijvasis did big Govardhan Parikrama. They went around Govardhan Hill. The men and the animals and the boys, you know, the cowherd boys, they walked. The ladies and the smaller children, they were on buffalo carts, ox carts. And the ladies were singing a beautiful song. I don't know all the words, but it goes something like, it's, you know, singing, and then one side sings, the other side responds. Who killed Putana? Krishna! Who killed Agasura? Krishna! And so on and so on and so on, like this. They were singing and glorifying Krishna as they're going around. The next day, this is something that's not in the Bhagavatam, but Jiva Goswami describes it in Gopal Chandru. The next day, see the puja, the Govardhan puja occurred on the first day of the waxing moon. Do you know what I mean? In the lunar month, the month begins with full moon. And then the moon goes down till there's no moon. And then it starts waxing, means it starts coming up. Until it's full moon again, or almost full moon. And on the day before full moon, that's the last day of the month, lunar month. And the full moon day is the first day of the next lunar month. So on the first day, means in the middle of the lunar month, the first day the moon starts coming up a little. That's when the Govardhan Puja happened. And then the second day is called Dvitiya. Dvitiya just means second. On the Dvitiya, it is called that one, the Dvitiya, the next day after the first day of the waxing moon, that's called Bratri Dvitiya. Bratri means brothers. It is the second day of the moon, which is dedicated to the brothers. And on that day, in Vrindavan, the gopis, cowherd girls, because it's Bratri Dvitiya, no, they did not do Raksha Bandhan either. They cooked for their brothers, the cowherd boys. And they served them prasadam personally. And it's the one day of Kaliya where they can interact with Krishna and Balaram, particularly with Krishna, and serve prasadam. So, what a feast and a half. A couple of feasts they prepared for Krishna Balaram, the cowherd boys, and Madhu Mangal. What a feast. And you know, some of you may think you are prasadam specialists. I know in Durban, Jai Sachinandan Prabhu, you may know him. He's a prasadam specialist. On Prabhupada's centennial year, 1996, he took a vow. He would have a feast at some devotee's house every day. To celebrate Prabhupada's centennial. And he did. Means a real feast. Every day for the whole year. This is prasadam specialist. So, you know, we may think we're prasadam specialists maybe, but compared to Madhu Mangal, we are just amateurs. Yes. So Madhu Mangal was just relishing and relishing all this amazing prasadam being hand-served by the gopis. And in the middle of it, he turned to Krishna and he said, Krishna, you are omnipotent and omniscient. You can do whatever you like. Krishna, I want you to declare every day to be Bratri Dvitiya. It is my favorite day. And Madhu Mangal said, I never realized how dear my sisters, the gopis, are to me. They're so dear to me. So that's nice. Now, okay. The next day. Well, everyone was happy. Everyone was just so happy. Except one person. Who was that? Lord Indra. And he was just so, you know, as we say in ISKCON talk, ISKCON speak. He was fried. Or, you know, really sort of deep ISKCON talk. He was fried to the max. He was just so incredibly angry that this Krishna convinced them not to offer me my Indra Puja. and to just offer it to this ill and a few cows? What is this? Who is he? And who are they? They think they don't need to worship me. He got so angry, lost control practically, absolutely. And he came to the point of thinking, all right, they don't want to worship me. That is so bad. They must die. They must die. Just imagine your pride, you get so carried away that if people don't worship you and really, you know, glorify you and make a big deal of you, you become so upset, you think that they should be killed. No, this is really getting into Maya. This is really getting into Maya. It's one thing if you do the best Sankirtan score, if you distribute more books than anyone else, and one day, and the next morning when they read out the scores, who distributed how many books, somehow they miss your name. And then you get upset. That's one thing. But when you come to the point of thinking they must be killed, you've lost it. You've just totally lost it out the window altogether. This was the condition of Lord Indra. Oh yeah. So he called for these Samvartika clouds. They are the clouds which come at the time of universal devastation, the annihilation of the universe. They come, and then they make this massive, massive storm, which annihilates the universe. All the planets. What to speak of, you know, sometimes you get these big storms, they flood a city or something like that. But this actually destroys all the planetary systems. Now that's a serious storm. And he told them, just go there to Vrindavan and just focus all your attention on this one little place. It's just a small area. You know, you can drive from one side to the other in maybe an hour and a half. It's not very big. Yeah. You know, it's a small area. And this whole storm, which could destroy, annihilate the entire universe, all the planetary systems, was going to focus on Vrindavan. So off went the storm clouds. And first they saw coming from the north cloud banks the color of moss. Moss. You know what moss is? It's green. It's sort of the color of Palesa's sari. You see that? Green. Moss. These big green clouds were coming, and they covered the sun, and the whole universe became dark like midnight. Then other storm clouds came. Some were in the shape of elephants. Did you see such a storm cloud? Some of them were in the shapes of crocodiles. Some of them were in the shapes of serpents. and multicolored, different colored. And then the rain started. The rain started. And the rain was falling like the trunks of trees, not just some drops, but like out of some giant hose. And there were hailstones the size of elephants. Imagine that landing on your car. Some hail damage. And the wind was just howling and screaming. At the time, Krishna was a little away from the hill, a couple of kilometers away. There's a place called Peta. You may not have heard about it. Get the book. It explains all about it. Seriously. Krishna was there with the cowherd boys, and he saw, here comes this just completely, you know, unique storm. We never saw anything even fractionally like it before. And Krishna, there's a tunnel there from that place underground to the hill. Krishna went through the tunnel to the hill. Just as he went, the gopis arrived, like just seconds after he left. And they knew that he had been there. So they're trying to figure out, where did he go? And there was one Kadamba tree, which Krishna had been standing under just before he left. And the gopis approached the Kadamba tree, and they asked, where's Krishna? Where did he go? And they asked with such intensity, the tree just became bewildered. And with his branches, he started pointing in different directions. I think he went that way, yeah. This way, yeah. I think he went that way. And the gopi said, what are you doing? What are you trying to tell us? This is nonsense. You're twisting everything. You're twisting everything. And they grabbed hold of the tree and twisted the tree around. And that was 5,000 years ago. The trunk of the tree is still there. You can see it. Yeah. And you can see this Kadamba tree has actually been twisted around. And there's a photo of it in the book. Hare Krishna. So Krishna went racing up to Govardhan Hill. And as the storm is just smashing, the inhabitants of Vrindavan started panicking, and let us just read a verse or two from the Bhagavatam, from the book. Let's see where we are. Where they are appealing to Krishna to protect them. This is Srila Bhagavatam 10, 25, 13. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Twannatham Gokulam Prabho, Tratam Arasi Devan Na, Kupitad Bhakta Vatsala. Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the rock of Indra. O Lord, you're so affectionate to your devotees. Please save us also. Note that they're praying to the Lord, please protect the cows. Because as far as they're concerned, the cows are more dear to them than their own lives. So please protect the cows and protect us also. Yeah. So it's very nice. Once I was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, Prabhupada was there. It may have been 76. Anyway, it was something like that. Prabhupada was still present and he was there. And me and a couple of other devotees, there was a group of sannyasis with Prabhupada, including Tamal Krishna Goswami, and who was a very sort of particular type of devotee, kind of very touchy and sensitive, and also very clever. And we were serving them prasadam. And one day, there was one of the sannyasis was called Adi Keshava Swami. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said to one of the servers, "Hey, get another chapati for Adi Keshava." The devotee went, started going out. And he said, "Get me one too." Yeah, I don't know. You might have to know him a bit to understand the subtlety. Yeah. It's basically saying, "I want a chapati." But now they're saying, "Please save the cows and save us too." But they're actually saying, "Please save the cows." Yeah. So then, Krishna responds. This is 10:25:18, a few verses later. Tasma mach charanam goshtam mannavam mat parigraham gopaye swatma yoge la surya me vrata ahita. I must protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed, they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees." And in the commentaries, you'll find it stated there, this is the great vow of Krishna. This is Krishna's great vow. "I have taken a vow to protect my devotees." So then Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. He actually picked it up quite quickly. So quickly that he did not even tighten his cloth around his waist, sort of almost like a belt, but it's cloth, which they tie in the front around their waists. And wrestlers, when wrestlers are going to fight, they tighten that cloth around their waists. And sometimes, to mock the opposing fighter, they make a funny sound by flapping their arms. Do you know what I mean? Can someone demonstrate for the sake of the uninitiated? If this was Russia, we'd have like at least 10. But South Africans are more reserved. So Krishna looked at the hill. It made a loud sound, like rowdy children shouting. Do you ever shout? No? You're good, right? That's it. As the Lord lifted the hill, flowers fell from the sky. Well, flowers fell from the trees on the hill, appearing to be Govardhan's jubilant laughter on being touched by the hand of the Lord. Krishna lifted the hill on the little finger of his left hand. And Gobadan, you know, everything was dark like midnight. You couldn't see your hand practically in front of your face because of the clouds and this fantastic storm. But as Govardhan's peaks went higher and higher, as Krishna lifted the hill, they cut those clouds to pieces. Yeah. The lions on the hill attacked the clouds and just tore them to pieces with their claws, feeling inspired by Krishna's potency. With its beautiful rocks glistening in the rain, Govardhan looked like a mountain of glistening gems. Glittering gems. Very beautiful. So everyone was astonished. What is this? Little boy, big hill, what is happening here? You know, because of the influence of Yoga Maya, which covers their real knowledge of what is concrete reality, because of the influence of Yoga Maya, they did not think that this is completely ridiculous. Little 7-year-old boy is lifting a big hill. It cannot be happening. No. They just thought, oh, look at that. Wow. Krishna's lifting the hill. Gee whiz. This is Yoga Maya. Yeah. So they're a little bewildered. Oh, sure. Is he really lifting the hill? Then to encourage them to just become more peaceful and to come under the hill, Krishna started calling out to them in a very special way by addressing them like, oh my father, oh my mother, oh my friends and whoever. But he drew out the oh. Oh, my father. Oh, my mother. Oh, my friends. Come under. And he said that don't be disturbed. You saw how that gigantic form of the hill was hovering above the hill. So that was the hill hovering above the hill. Yeah. And now the hill is hovering on my little finger. I'm not really holding the hill. The hill is hovering there. Yes. By his own potency. So don't worry. Just come under. For me, he's as light as a piece of cotton. Yeah, come under. So they went under. When they went under, they saw that, well, first of all, rocks fell off the hill and formed a wall, so the floodwaters didn't come in. Under the hill, there was a great valley lit by self-effulgent jewels. The floors were embedded with touchstones. It was divided into different areas like rooms, and gentle, pleasing breezes were just sort of wafting through very gently. They were luxuriant fields of green barley and beautiful green grass and lakes of crystal clear water for the cows. So they were so happy. And Govardhan expanded in size so all the living entities in Vrajmandala could go under. So now everyone is looking at Krishna. This is Krishna. You see, Krishna was looking forward to this pastime. This is practically the favorite, Krishna's favorite pastime. Because in this pastime, he has loving exchanges with all his devotees in all the different rasas in one place at one time. Normally, like Nandagram, he relates with his parents. Out in the fields and the forests with the cowherd boys. At Radhakund, Shamakund with the gopis. But here, all of the devotees in all the rasas are all assembled and just focused on Krishna. Completely. One of Krishna's favorite pastimes. And even the gopis, last night in Santan, we explained how normally the gopis cannot look at Krishna because the adults, their parents, are watching. Now, is there some funny business going on here? Between our daughters and Krishna. Oh, oh. You know, if they look at him, oh, we're going to give them the sauce. It's gone, Jack. Some hot chili sauce. And so the gopis cannot just look at Krishna. So therefore the gopis have perfected the art of the sidelong glance. Very extremely quickly looking to the side to look at Krishna and looking back so quickly that even if their fathers are watching them to see, now you're going to look at Krishna, but they won't see them looking. They'll think they're just looking at them. You know, seeing you're sort of a new group, we may have to demonstrate. See, normally if you look to the side, just watch this, you got to start, you know, looking at the Shinananda. But you can see it, can't you? You can see my eyes moving. That's normally. But if you're trained, and we've taken some training, then you can do it so fast that you'll never see. Just watch, I'm going to look at Nishinyananda. Okay, so just watch my eyes. Did you see that? You didn't see it. This is it. You got to be fast. But now the gopis were there, and everyone is just looking at Krishna. Completely spellbound. And no one's watching the gopis to see what they did. So none of the gopis just looking at Krishna. Just like everyone else. And they're so happy. So happy. So there's Krishna holding the hill. And Madhu Mangal, Krishna's funny Brahmin friend, went up to Krishna and said, when you've got a friend like me, a qualified Brahmin, then why do you need to bother yourself with holding the hill? See, he has a walking stick. Madhu Mangal has a walking stick. Because he has one leg shorter than the other. Yeah. So he told Krishna, listen, with a friend like me. Why do you need to bother holding me up? I'll just hold it on my walking stick. Because of my Brahman tejas, my Brahminical power. And you can relax. It's okay. Mother Mangali is very cool. And Mother Yashoda and the ladies, they're just looking at Krishna. And Mother Yashoda said to some of her girlfriends, she said, you know, my poor little Krishna, he's been holding this hill now for half an hour. His finger must be getting tired. They didn't think, you know, he's a seven-year-old child. How's he holding it? They're not even using both hands. Just one little finger of his left hand. So Mother Yashoda said, you know, I think we have to help him. So the ladies went and they started massaging his arm. And Mother Yashoda was massaging his finger. Are you feeling better, Krishna? Is it okay? And Krishna said, yes, Mata. It's feeling better. Thank you. This is what the ladies did. And the cowherd men, the adult men, they're looking at Krishna, looking at the hill, looking at Krishna, looking at the hill. And they said, listen, Krishna, you're just a small boy. How can you just hold this hill like this? We're big men. Let us hold it. So you just let the weight come over on our sticks, because those sticks for herding the cows. They push their sticks up under the bottom of the hill. Now let the weight come on our sticks. Krishna said, oh, okay, if that's what you want. Some of the weight came over. And the cowherd men find the hill is coming down. And they're struggling to hold their sticks, but it's coming down and down and down, and they're almost on the ground. And then they call out, Krishna, help! And Krishna lifted the hill up again. Madhu Mangal at one point saw that Krishna, because he's holding the hill with his left hand, Krishna with his right hand took his flute and put it to his lips. He was about to play. Madhu Mangal panicked. Completely panicked. Because you see, when Krishna plays his flute, sometimes, you know, like things like water, like a river, soft things become hard. And hard things like a hill, they melt. Rocks melt. This happens when Krishna plays his flute. Krishna's about to play his flute. And Madhu Mangal shouted out, Krishna, don't play your flute! Stop now! He said, Krishna, if you play your flute, Govardhan Hill may melt, and then we'll all drown. So don't play your flute. And the gopis are just looking at Krishna. And Radharani is looking at Krishna. And the gopis said to Radharani, Radharani, stop looking at Krishna. If Krishna sees you looking at him, he may lose control and drop the hill. Because Krishna shakes when he sees Radharani sometimes. So Radharani turned away, lifted her sari or her cloth over her head, and then Jiva Goswami says, that looks. Yes, Jiva Goswami says, then, unseen, even by her intimate sakis, Radharani beamed a sweet, gentle smile to Krishna, which bathed him in a shower of nectar. So all these things are happening. Krishna's looking around. And then Krishna saw the beauty of the gopis. And it's not just beauty, like, you know, someone is somehow particularly good looking physically. Not like, not beauty in that sense, but it's an expression of their love. So Krishna saw their beauty, means he saw their love, and Krishna lost control. And he started shaking, and the mountain started moving. And everyone panicked, Krishna, help, what's happening? And they're saying, oh, we knew he couldn't hold it for so long. He's getting too tired, I don't know what to do. But it was just because Krishna was looking at the gopis. And then Balaram understood, because he's the older brother, and he's sharp. He's really sharp. So Balaram saw what was happening, understood what was happening, and he gave Krishna a real older brother's look. Listen, Krishna, you fool yourself. And Krishna saw that Balaram's looking like that. And Krishna felt embarrassed. And he pulled himself together. So, tears like strings of pearls were glistening in Radharani's eyes. And she cursed Providence. Providence, you know, whoever arranges for things to happen. She thought, oh Providence, you are pathetic. You never had the intelligence to know what to do and what not to do. The only time I'm able to look without interruption at my beloved is a time when he must hold up a great mountain with his hand. What sort of arrangement is this? Oh, Providence. So, you know, many things happened, and you'd have to read the book to really get it. But Jiva Goswami says, Anantashesh with his thousand vows, even if he spoke for 7 days of Brahma, could not complete the glories of Krishna's pastime of holding the mountain for 7 days. If a poet quickly tries to describe this in 3 or 4 verses, devoid of ornaments, he will end in despair. This is why we're taking some time. Hope you don't mind. So meanwhile, the clouds were just pouring and howling and hailing just with just this most frantic intensity. And they would, one massive cloud would just pour all the rain he had, go back to the ocean and just drink up more, and come back and just vomit it out. So soon they became completely exhausted, and they came back and fell at the feet of Unja, begging him, please let us rest. Some of them almost died. Can you imagine a dead cloud? So after a week, Indra, hissing like a snake, hissing like a snake, he came to see the devastation. The clouds had now withdrawn. This is after the week. Indra came to see and to have a good laugh. he thought. Let's see the flood, the destroyed buildings, dead bodies everywhere. Let's just see how they got what they deserved for not worshipping me. And he came, and what did he see? There's Krishna still holding the hill. And Vrindavan looks very nice. And then everyone came out of the hill.